All right, everybody, welcome to episode 52 of the 5-Minute Major Podcast of St. Louis, presented by Across the Board Games. Today, we have another special guest. He was the 10th round pick out of Edmonton, Alberta, a three-time Memorial Cup winner with the Kamloops Blazers. He played 7 years in the NHL, five of which were in St. Louis. He was a buzzsaw, maybe top five flow in Blues history. Everyone, please welcome Mr. Tyson Nash.
Yeah, baby. What's up, guys? Well, you got to be known for something, I guess, right? I mean, it certainly wasn't going to be my stats. It wasn't going to be my 5-minute majors. Those were very forgettable besides the new elbow on my face that I earned in St. Louis with all those fights. I'll never forget my first fight was Pat Verbeek and two giant noses. It was like we were trying to poke each other's eyes out with our noses, but that was my first fight. I'll never forget it. Thanks, guys. That's
funny. Yeah, no, we're happy to have you on. I know it's you're still heavily involved in hockey, and you know you're still part of the Blues alumni and working up there in Utah. So how did this whole adventure with Utah get going for you?
Well, I'm spreading the love around, right? We all know, you know, Arizona lost their hockey team, which to this day, it is mind-boggling how the city politics got involved. The Phoenix Suns literally own this town. So I really believe that until the Suns and the Coyotes can get in bed together, I don't think a hockey team comes back, but I hope it does happen because this is one of the best cities in America. We do have hockey fans. We were here for 28 years. We're just pumping kids out of Arizona as well to play pro, to play in the NHL, to play D1 colleges, all across America. So this is a hockey hotbed, believe it or not. But also, believe it or not, weird. You got to put the rink in the right part of town or it doesn't work, boys. Yeah. But anyway, super happy for Utah, the people of Utah, amazing people. What a community. They're starting to grow. We have one of the best owners in sports, not only hockey, but in sports. He wants to spend money. He's cutting edge the way he thinks about business and about sports and about life in general. So feel very blessed to be a part of a franchise like that. And we were talking before we hit play on the record button, but this is a team that that is coming out of the ashes. It has been a rebuild for I don't know how long. Literally, it was like polishing a turd for me as a broadcaster for all those years. Oh, we're rebuilding. We got a new owner. We're in bankruptcy. You know, like we got a new arena. We're moving to the mullet. Like, and we're like sitting there trying to polish it. Like, oh, don't worry, guys. It doesn't smell that bad. Like, come to a game, buy a jersey. Like, no. Like, this team now is finally out of it. And I love it. I really do. And how my job. So I have a Nash cast. And it's a show like Peyton Manning has on ESPN, except he, you know, is a Hall of Famer. He's won Super Bowls, him and his brother. I have not, right? So I don't know how I got a show, but I actually do. And so Ryan Smith, our owner, he and I belong to the same golf course in the summer. And after we get off the golf course, everyone sits, has a couple cocktails, and the stories just continue, right? And they start flying around the round table. We sit at a place, it's called the Tree Bar at our golf club. And, you know, we're all sitting there, there's four of us. Half an hour later, there's 12 of us, right? And the stories are just rolling and they're getting funnier and they're getting more exaggerated as, you know, everybody sits down and starts sharing, right? And Ryan Smith is sitting there and he's going, wait a minute, this is unbelievable. Like, what is going on here? We need to replicate that and do that on TV. And I think, Tyson, you could be the guy. And so that's how I got my job with the Utah Mammoth. And I'm loving it. It's a huge stretch for me. It's something I've never done. I'm usually on the other side of the microphone, as I am today. But now I'm asking the questions. And as you guys know, it's not easy. It's not easy to get guests. It's like herding cats every day. Oh, yeah. People cancel. And you're just like, oh my God, I got no one to fill. Like, what am I going to do? Right. So anyway, that's how it came to be. I'm just grateful to be in this great game.
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. It's funny how you say it is like herding cats. My God, that's that's like my big thing is to get us people. And I like, I messaged so many people, and some people are like, yeah. And then I don't hear back from them for, and yeah. I was like, okay, you could have just said no, we would have been all good.
Yeah.
But right. No, it's an interesting process. And I don't think a lot of people understand that, because you're just like,
and well, you're another donkey with a podcast too, right? Yeah. I'm like, now I'm one of those guys. I'm like, oh, welcome to the party. The problem is, and Mike Commodore was on my show the other day helping me co-host, and we had Paul Bissonnette. And I'm sitting there and we're doing the timeline. And I'm like, my God, we had potential to do a podcast, myself and Mike Comrie. And it was called In One. That's his tag saying, right? Yeah. And we were going to do it actually before Biss even started doing Spit and Chiclets. I'm like, boy, did we miss the boat on that one, right? But my boss, because I was doing TV, he's like, you can't do a podcast. You especially can't do a podcast with Mike Commodore, because the stories are going to be who God knows what, right? So it's probably a good thing.
How was it talking to Biz? That's such a great pickup for your show. Like, he is the top.
He's unhinged.
Showman of the NHL right now.
Yeah.
How was he?
He is honestly the Howard Stern of hockey, right? I mean, he really is. And I am always so proud of guys that had careers, but then had better careers afterwards. And Paul Bissonnette, God love him. The money he's making, I'm so happy, so proud of him. We worked together for a number of years with the Coyotes. He was doing radio, I was doing TV. We were traveling around. We were doing all these pillow talks together, long before really social media. Like, can you imagine if social media was running back then? Those were some of the funniest moments and best stories. Whoever's listening, go to YouTube. It's called Pillow Talk. Like, it's unbelievable that thing never just exploded, right? But again, Biss is one of the biggest personalities that our game has ever seen. And he, you know, walks that fine line, but that's kind of what people want to see. And I've been around him and other huge stars. And I can tell you guys that Paul Bissonnette gets mobbed. We went to breakfast not too long ago in Arizona. I bet 15 people came up and wanted pictures and autographs, and rightfully so. I mean, what he's doing, and he grinds like every day. It's incredible. He is somewhere different. He's in another city, another hotel, and he's just obviously working his ass off.
Yeah, that's we always joke, like, of course we've sent messages through Instagram, and I was like, Mike, he's never gonna read this. Like, he's gonna be like, the 5 minute major, who are these guys from St. Louis?
200 followers from St. Louis, never played a game in their life, even if it was like roller in eighth grade. We're nobodies, man.
but it's been fun. Like we tell people, we're like, we talk hockey every day to each other. We're like, hey, maybe people will listen. We're like, we're just two idiots, you know, why not? And here we are. People
never know, boys.
And I was like, here we go. I was like, why not?
You never know. I mean, I turned 5 followers into 10 right now, so I'm I got some momentum. So it's a grind, though, right? People don't get it. It's like you think it's just gonna pop off, right? And I have the Utah Mammoth behind me in ways, right? Which you guys, you know, obviously don't have the St. Louis Blues, I don't think, but it is it's a grind. I respect the hell out of people who stick with this and just keep chugging along, because a lot of people, it's paying huge dividends. Like, how this works, the money that some of these podcasts are making, it's incredible. And I think people, they want more of it. If you're good, you have a personality, you're going to last.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's throw it back. Tell us how it was growing up in Edmonton, Alberta. Like, was it just Oilers hockey in your household, or was it kind of all over the board? How did you get into it?
How was it growing up in Edmonton? I'll tell you, it was balls cold. That's how it was in Edmonton. So, I mean, there's nothing else to do, right? I mean, it's hockey, hockey, hockey. We had, I think, the Edmonton Trappers at one point. That was like, I think it was Anaheim's farm team, baseball team. Just terrible baseball, terrible facility. But Edmonton, I'll tell you, it's, and then we had the Edmonton Eskimos. That was kind of fun too. You know, the Gizmo Williams and, you know, just some of the studs we had there. But, it was always about hockey for me. I loved it from the moment I put skates on, the outdoor rinks, the ponds, the lakes that we have in Edmonton. And Edmonton, I'll tell you, it has this, they have some of the best people in the world, right? That's what they're known for. And that's what is close to my heart. I would have gave you know, my right to play for the Edmonton Oilers back in the day. I really would have. I mean, that's my hometown. I can't imagine watching the Oilers all those years, all the Stanley Cups, Mark Messier, Glenn Anderson, Yari Curry, Paul Coffey, Kevin Lowe, Charlie Huddy, who was an absolute stud, Glenn Anderson. I mean, the list goes on, right? Gretz. I mean, it's just Esa Tikkanen and one of my favorite players, Marty McSorley, who I just had on the show the other day. You know, so it's that's what I grew up with. And I was so spoiled because all I did was watch championships and Stanley Cups and records falling because of Wayne Gretzky and Paul Coffey, right? So it was through and through. I had Wayne Gretzky wallpaper, Wayne Gretzky bed sheets, and then Wayne Gretzky ended up being my coach, right? And also the guy who ended my career on top of it all. But it's been a journey, boys.
Yeah, it's always a humbling moment when your idol that you watch growing up, and then they're like, yeah, by the way, you're done. And you're like, come on, man. What are you doing to me?
I cried. I literally cried on his big mahogany table when he brought me into his office. I was so caught off guard. I was like, are you kidding me? This is not happening. This is not happening. But I will say this. It's even extra special. I got to play golf with Wayne a few times this summer when – you meet your childhood hero, idol, right? And they are better people than they were players or athletes. And that's what Wayne Gretzky is. He is the best human being out there. And I'll never forget when I ended up retiring and coming back to broadcasting, it was a rule. It was literally a rule. You dropped your bags in your hotel room. We get to San Jose, say, and you go right down to the bar. You go down to the hotel bar and you have to have at least a drink, and not a drink of booze, a drink of orange juice, a drink of wine, like whatever your choice is, but you're going to sit and be a part of the group. Now, the players were all in their hotel rooms, but if you were trainers or broadcasting, you were down there at the table, and Wayne just fired story after story after story. Awesome. The detail, and you're just like, this is Wayne Gretzky. Like, this is incredible. You don't get this anywhere in the world, right? I mean, this guy would have the best podcast on the planet if he actually did one.
Yeah, no, that's I could not imagine just being a fly on the wall there, what I would have given to be a part of that group. That would have been a heck of a time.
Oh yeah. Well, we had a guy, Bob Heathouse, who's a legendary radio play-by-play guy, and he would always look at me and go, Nasher, do you think Wayne's gonna have everyone down to the bar again tonight? Like, he lived for it, right? And like, think of that. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's just everyone's dream. It's the best player to ever lace up the skates, and he's hanging out, taking the time. And that's also why those teams were always so good, because that's how you build a team bond, right? I'm a radio guy. I'm a TV guy. And yet we're building a bond and trust with your basically your new teammates, right? You know, as far as the hockey management goes. So,
yeah. So
that's really cool.
I was going to say, so growing up, I know you got drafted, but growing up, did you think the NHL was going to happen? Like, when did you know that you were going to make it in?
I think I always knew. I think I always just believed, right? I mean, you have to believe. If you don't believe, how is anyone else going to believe in you? If you're walking around unsure of yourself or just, you know, wavering on good and bad and, you know, belief and no belief, I mean, no one else is going to believe in you. So that's one thing I always had. And I was always angry. I always ran hot, right? And I was always pissed off. You can ask some of my teammates back in junior. And like, everyone's really good when they're a kid. And I was good. I was listed at 13 years of age. And I was really big when I was young. I never grew since, really. But every guy that would get drafted ahead of me or sign their contract and get more money than me, I was like, this is bullshit. And I literally made a list of all the guys in my league that got drafted ahead of me. And I'm like, I'm going to fucking take every one of these guys out. Like, I'm going to run them through the boards and I'm going to show them. So I always had a chip on my shoulder and it was always fuel for the fire. I always had teachers that always told my friends, why do you hang out with this guy? He's a loser. You know, he comes from a broken home and, you know, like he's going nowhere. And that always stuck with me, right? I always had something to prove. And I think for every young hockey player, any person out there, even if you're in business, but in sports, You know, you have to find motivation some way, somehow, and that doesn't always work for everybody, right? So you have to find what works for you. And it worked for me, and then it kind of works against you as your career goes on, right? If you keep that mentality. But I always had something to prove, and honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. If I would have been a first round draft pick, I don't think I ever would have made it, because I would have been too cocky, right? I would have been like, oh, I'm the man, I'm this, I'm that, right? But I was never that. I was the exact opposite of that, which, you know, I think was a blessing.
Yeah, I think we talked to Reed Lowe, and he kind of had that same idea that, like, mm-hmm. nothing was handed to him, and it was the grind that made him the player he was, and the grind that probably kept him in the league, like he said, as long as he did, because it was like, everyone was writing him off, and he's like, that's fine, I'll do whatever I got to do to stick around. And he goes, it was just fuel for the fire. And I think a lot of the people we've talked to, that's all the same kind of idea and the mindset we're getting. And even the PWHL players, it's like, yeah, people are like, you can go to college, but there's not really much for it. And they're like, no, I'm going to go play. I'm going to keep going. And it's the mindset of all these winners. And it's fun seeing that in all the players that have advanced.
And I will say this also too, at some point, like, that mentality is great, but at some point you really do though need a coach that believes in you, right? That finally has your back. I mean, only so long you can hate every one of your coaches and be pissed off all day long. I mean, that's a terrible way to walk around, right? But for me, it was literally going to the St. Louis Blues, getting sent down. First of all, having the belief from the Blues, I was signed July 1 at like 8 o'clock in the morning. Larry Plough calls me and I'm like, holy cow, this is unbelievable. And all because of Bob Plager, the great Bob Plager. He found me, he followed me around. He was watching Worcester play and they happened to be playing Syracuse, which is who I was playing for, the Vancouver Canucks farm team. And Bob Plager is like, yeah, great, these Worcester guys, but who is this Nash freaking guy? Who's this Nash guy? And then he's like, you know what? I'm getting off the Worcester bus. I'm going to go follow the Syracuse team because I know they're going to Philadelphia now. And they got Frank Bylois. They got this guy. They got that guy. Let's see if that guy can do what he did against us, against Philadelphia. And he told me the story. I had no idea this even existed. And literally, like, right before he died, he told me the story. I never really understood how I became a Blue. And that was the story. He followed me from Worcester to Syracuse to Philadelphia. And he was like, this guy's the real deal. Let's sign him. Right. And that's how I ended up being a Blue. That's how I got Larry Plough on the phone. But it was then I get sent down to Worcester after I signed with the Blues. And it was Greg Gilbert, who was our head coach down there, and Steve Plough. And these guys just loved me. They appreciated what I did, what I brought to the table. But Greg also taught me what it was going to take for me to make it to the NHL. Not everybody, not the same for everybody, but what it was going to take for me. Getting pucks out in the defensive zone, being an agitator, you know, being a pest, being all those things, because he knew St. Louis had enough goal scorers. They had enough centermen. They had enough of those guys. What they didn't have was the sandpaper that I could bring. And that's what you have to do. So kids, if you're listening out there, and coaches, if you're listening out there, believe in people, teach them individually. And, you know, again, the St. Louis Blues changed the entire trajectory of my career, obviously giving me that chance.
Wow. You know, that's, I can't believe Bobby still isn't with us. It's really sad, but he truly was Mr. Blue, you know, the best, truly the best. He just knew everything and everyone.
He was the heart of soul, and he was the heart of soul of the team, but he was the heart and soul of, like, St. Louis and what Blues fans are and what we want from a hockey player.
And it was you know what I'll say, you guys, like, the most important thing too, and what we don't have in Utah, is an alumni. And right. when you're in St. Louis, it is so extra special because you have Bobby Plager. I mean, after every game, he's in the locker room. He's strolling around. He's talking to guys, whether he's telling a joke or, you know, he's, you know, busting balls a little bit. Like, it's important because then those players, not only do they feel supported, but they also know that, hey, I have to follow what's gone on before me, right? And this is what it is about being a St. Louis Blue. And you got Chris Pronger, you got Al MacInnis, you got Keith Tkachuk. I mean, is it any more intimidating than that, right? Than having those guys floating through the locker room, legends of the game. And you're a St. Louis Blue, you're a Jordan Kyrou, or you're a Thomas. Like, you're paying attention. right? And you can't get away with stuff. And when those guys are doing it, it forces you now to do it, right? And so now, Braden Schenn, I think he's one of the best captains in the NHL right now. And when you're a young kid, you look at how he goes about his business. First guy on the ice at practice, last guy off, talking to young kids, teaching them the ropes, right? Fighting, signing autographs, going to charity events. My daughter runs the St. Louis Blues alumni, and he's one of the first guys. He found out that she was going to St. Louis, and he calls her up, doesn't call me up, gets her number, finds her number, calls her and says, Maddie, you need anything in this town? You call me. You want to come for dinner? You call me. Like, he doesn't owe her anything, right? But that's what a great captain does.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the best parts about him. And I think cool for me, he comes from a family of firefighters. His dad was a firefighter. My dad's a firefighter. My uncle was a firefighter. And that right there, I think there's some form of just the hard hat and work boot mentality. And I think I've tried to keep that mentality because that's my dad. He's always working. And I think it's instilled in us at a young age. And I think Braden just has that through and through where it's just like, everyone you talk to, it's the same thing. Like, he is the man for the job. And you just reinforce that with all that story. And it's good to know as a Blues fan that we have the right guy leading this team.
Yeah. 1,000%. And it's as simple as you get on the airplane or you get onto a bus. How do you treat the bus driver? How do you treat the trainers? Like, that's how you tell a character human being, right? Get on the plane, say hi to the radio guy. Say hi to, like, I know you got your Louis Vuitton bags and your Gucci shoes and all that. You're getting on a private plane. Put your phone down and say hello. How about that? It's that simple, right? And that starts at the top.
I don't know if you can answer this, but do you have any advice for the young players at the Blues right now? Like, it's obviously been a rocky start. We know Braden Schenn is doing what he can, and it just seems like there's Monty's calling it an effort level thing. But I don't know. I just can't put my finger on why it's a repetitive inconsistency thing. You know what I mean? I mean, it could be a bunch of stuff we just talked about that we don't know, obviously.
I mean, for me, I say it to my son. I mean, it's real simple. Hockey is not a difficult game to understand. It really isn't, right? And it is about consistency. You are a pro. You know you have a high level. I saw the Blues play against the Vancouver Canucks. I called that game between the benches. And I'm like, wow, this Blues team is unreal. Like, they have it all. They got guys that can shoot the puck. They got, you know, Neighbors. Like, all this grit, Holloway, these guys that just grind, right? They'll bang you down. They can score goals on top of it. But can you bring it consistently? That's what it is to be a great team and a great player, right? And when you lose it, how quickly do you get it back, right? But hockey is a real simple game. Be the hardest, like, the non-negotiables, and I know Monty is this way, and it's work ethic, right? It's structure. I mean, those are all things that you can control. Like, it really is. And right now, I do. I saw the Blues play so well, but why can't you do it the next night and the next night and the next night, right? That's the issue, but that's also the issue with a lot of teams right now. You look at Ottawa. I'm going to call games on Monday for Amazon Prime. I'm looking at these two teams, Ottawa and Boston. Boston's lost 6 games in a row. What, like, when has that happened in that organization? Oh, like, never.
And they were right. Good games too, like pretty close games. They just couldn't close anything out.
They're finding ways to lose. And that's what happens when you get in that rut, right? And Ottawa's lost for a long time, right? So it's hard to get out of that, right? Again, it's just about consistency in this game. And you got to play defense. Defense. Boston, all their big boys. Pastrnak is on a roll right now. I mean, Zaka, these guys are popping off, but they can't keep the puck out of their own net, and their goaltenders are struggling. So
that's been we talked about that so much last season with the whole Swayman, like, not signing, not having a deal in place. You trade Allmark away, and then it just is the dynamics of goalies right now, and just the struggle of, do you want to play them, do you not want to play them, and like balancing the games. And I get it's an Olympic season, But sometimes you just got to ride the hot hand, and I don't care if the guy's a little tired. Ride the guy.
Oh, you're trying to fire me up, aren't you? Aren't you? That's my biggest pet peeve, and you're dead on. I hate it. I hate it. Like, I played with Grant Fuhrer, played 79 games in a row. Can you imagine telling Grant Fuhrer, like, no, you're going to take a break, or Patrick Waugh, or Dominic Hasek, or Cujo, who I also played with? Not a chance in hell are you telling Patrick Waugh, oh, you know what? You had a shutout last night. You're not going to play next game. That's like telling, like, I get a hat trick and I'm going to have load management. Like these basketball players. Are you joking me? Yeah. Like, you're making $50, $60, $70 million and you need a load management day? I can't imagine as a fan or as a coach, I'm losing my best player because he needs a day off. Like, are you joking? Tell that to Michael Jordan or Charles Barkley. Yeah. Like, those guys would lose their Stockton. This guy, I think, missed three games his entire career, right? So goalies, you ride them. You have to ride them. Give them less practice days. There's nothing worse as a goalie to practice. Right? If he's struggling, yeah, take a couple games off, find your game, video, practice time, all that stuff. But when your goalie is rocking and rolling, don't even think about taking him out of the net. If you have a good backup goaltender, that can be a nightmare, an absolute nightmare for your number one goalie, right? Those guys are messed up anyway. They're stopping 100 mile an hour slap shots. So they're not all there upstairs. No. So get out of their head and don't have them looking back in the rearview mirror because they're worried about their backup stealing their net. That should never be an option. Like, look at Florida. Do you even know who the backup goalie was? No, you didn't. I do because he ended up in Utah this year. But besides that, no one in the world knew who the backup goalie was in Florida or Tampa.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, and they can keep cycling through these backup goalies because it's like, all right, we'll sign a guy to a 1 or 2 year deal. We got Bob. Yeah. He'll play.
Look at Edmonton. Look at Edmonton, the two best players in the world. And they're going into game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals, and they don't know who their number one goalie is. Is it Skinner or is it Pickard? I'm like, oh my God. Like, how has somebody's head not rolling right now? Oh, like, yeah, someone should have been fired for that alone. I mean, that's absolutely insanity that you don't have a number one goalie for that team in front of you.
No, that's what we keep saying that.
Hating on, like, Edmonton for a year now.
It's like, what are we doing? You're wasting some of the best years of your franchise players right now. And terrible. Thank God he was willing to sign another 2 year deal, but it's like, get a goalie back there. You got some money, spend it.
If I was him, I would be gonzo just for that, that alone, right? I mean, and that's another thing. I'm like, if I was that good, I would be in the coach's room. I'd be in the general manager's room going, get me this guy, get me that guy. Like, I'm the shit of the shit, right? And a lot of guys, you talk to some of the Oilers, like, I'm like, was Messier like that? And they're like, no, not really. Like, guys just kind of sit back and just let the, like, if I'm the captain and I'm that good, this is apparently my team. I want to say, I want a voice, right? I'm going in that general manager's office and going, I need this guy. We need to play this guy. You know, like, that's what I'm doing, because ultimately it's going to fall on Connor McDavid's shoulders.
Yeah.
It makes me feel so bad for him, because that pressure is just obviously something that not many people experience. And, like, obviously he just did it to himself for the next 3 years. But, like,
you never know if you're going to get back there. Like, they did it twice in a row. They're in the finals. You don't know if you're going to get a third time. Like, it's hard enough making the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Let alone going all that way and for everything to go the right way. So those were opportunities that are lost big time.
It's wild. You have another question, Josh, or can I ask one?
Yeah, you got it, Mikey.
Okay. So I want to throw back again to those Memorial Cups. It was for Kamloops Blazers. You can kind of explain where that is for the American listeners or whatever, I'm sure. But you are one of three players to win it three times on the same team, which is just like an unreal stat. Can you kind of explain how good that team was? Like, go into detail.
Yeah, it was a special group. It really was. And, you know, I played there when I was 15, till I was 19. And, I'll tell you what, those friendships, and when you win, you guys, like, as you guys know, in St. Louis, when you guys won the cup, like, that is a bond that lasts forever, right? Nothing can ever be taken away from that and the group. And when you win, it's just such a bond because you have literally had to go to the war, and that galvanizes you as a group. And no different for us, even though it was junior, all those teams, 3 out of the 4 years, we won. And when my son, like, you know, I don't think they really understood what that meant. But then when you're watching, you know, his journey and he's watching his own journey, he's like, holy crap, that, like, just making the playoffs 4 years in a row when you're playing junior, because the turnover is so great, is very difficult, right? And then to win the WHL title, right? And then to go to the Memorial Cup and actually win the whole tournament is just, it's mind-boggling. But I really finally, I think, appreciated it watching my son go through it. He went to the Western Conference Finals against Seattle a few years ago, and I'm like, man, this is a real grind. I can't believe I did this. Like, not just once, but 3 different times, and came out on top, right? So feel real blessed to be a part of that team. It taught me what it took to win, taught me so many different life lessons when you win. And I don't think it matters where you win. When you win a championship, you become a winner in a lot of people's eyes, in the scouts and the general managers around the league. And those managers and those teams, they want guys that know what it takes to win, because there's regular season players and then there's playoff performers. And those two players are very, very different.
Yeah. And I was going to say, with the leagues you've played in over the time, with the WHL, the AHL and the NHL, what do you think evolved you, like, going forward? Like, what part of your game do you think had to change? Because I know people say the AHL is one of the hardest leagues to play in, because it's men and young and boys almost, and you're beating the crap out of each other in the way, and you're all trying to get to the league, but it's trying to stay healthy in the grind.
It's the grind. It really is. And ultimately, for athletes, it's, and anyone who's successful in this world, it's the mental. Everyone can skate, everyone can shoot, everyone can hit, most everyone can fight, but can you do it consistently? Again, there's that word, right? Can you do it consistently? And when shit falls apart or comes off the rails, how quickly do you get it back, right? That's the difference. And can you handle adversity? I can tell you so many guys that were better than me, and they get angry when their careers are over and they're like, "Whoa, you got a break, or you did this, or you did that." No, it's here, right? Like, "Oh, I had an injury and that kept me out." I'm like, yeah, we all had injuries. Like, you come back stronger. Can you handle the adversity? Can you get slapped around and sent down to the East Coast League and get pissed off and then, you know, make amends and stick it up someone's ass, right? That's what it's about. And I think I did that fairly well. And that's kind of what kept me, you know, progressing and moving along. And you're right, the American Hockey League, it was a jungle, because everyone, I mean, you're playing against like dads who have like 2 or 3 kids and they're making, you know, like not a lot of money. And you're now a young guy and you're coming up and you're challenging him, or you're going to take his job. I mean, no. That, when they got kids, that is a whole other level what they're fighting for, right? Yeah. And you got to keep your wits about you, and you just got to keep plowing through. And then when you get that opportunity, you better be prepared for it, right? Because so many kids, you know, they bitch and they moan and they want a chance and they want that. Then they get the chance and they do nothing with it. It's like these kids come to training camp even. I'm like, my dad said, he goes, "When you go to St. Louis, it never worked out in Vancouver." He goes, "You're now 24. Like, it's over after this. This will be the last opportunity you get, because now you're going to be considered older, right? So this is it. They don't know you from Adam. You go in there, don't say woulda, coulda, shoulda, right?" And that's the mentality I went in there. And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to say, "Oh, I should have done that," or "I could have done that." No, do it. And every day I made a point of making sure everyone in that office and management staff and the coaching staff, they knew who the hell I was immediately.
Yeah. And coming into St. Louis, you played with some big name guys. You played with the Prongers, the Pavel Dimitras, the Marty Turks, the Chris Prongers. So, like, you were coming into a heavy team there, and you really had to make that mark. And what was it like walking into the locker room with some of these guys that, like, I mean, for Mike and I, like Al McInnis, like these players that are just one of a kind?
Yeah. I mean, it was, it was like an out of body experience, right? Because I knew all those players existed. I'd studied the lineup before I got there as a free agent signing. And I was petrified, but it was almost a blessing that I didn't know anyone, not a soul. So I literally laced up my skates, and the first scrimmage that we had, I was like, okay, here we go. This is it. This is it. This is my NHL career today. What am I going to do? So what do? I go out there. I'm scrimmaging against Pavel Dimitra, and Pavel Dimitra gets the puck, skates down the left side. Now he's the leading goal scorer and point producer for the Blues the year before, right? So we're in an inter-squad game in training camp. I'm not on the team. He gets the puck, cuts down the left side, cuts across the middle. I literally flatten him. I knock him straight horizontal. His helmet's off. He hits the ice, separates his shoulder. They literally scrape him off the ice with a shovel, right? And you could hear a pin drop. Like, everyone is just like, oh my God, who is this idiot? Who was that? And how is Pavel, right? And I'm like, oh my God, what did I just do? And who did I do it to, right? So yeah. I'm sitting there and they get him off the ice. Everyone claps and I go to make a line change. And guess who my coach is for the inter-squad game? Because Joel Quenneville and all the coaches were up in the stands watching. But take one guess who my coach was.
Is it
we mentioned him already.
Oh,
no, Bobby Plager.
Bobby Plager.
Bobby Plager. Bobby Plager is my coach. This is the guy who brought me to the St. Louis Blues. And I go to make a line change and he goes, stay out there. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. So all I hear from the other bench is Kelly Chase, you are a dead man. I'm going to kill you. I don't know who the hell you are, but you're dead, man. And I'm like, oh boy. And that's how I got noticed. And that's ultimately how I made the St. Louis Blues, right? Was because I went out, Kelly Chase, we dropped the gloves at center ice. I finished third in that fight, by the way. My nose was wrapped halfway around my head. Because he put it there, but it was, you know, you have to answer the bell, right? And I think I went on in that training camp and had probably 8 or 9 fights, as well as in preseason. I wasn't a fighter. I wasn't a great fighter either when I did, but you have to make a mark, right? And that's how it drives me crazy when I see these kids come to camp and they go through the motions and they're so scared to try hard, right? Or to fail. I don't know what it is with the kids nowadays, but I'm like, leave it all out there. Who cares? Like, kids in school, gym class, they don't want to try too hard because people make fun of you. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, we got all the girls because we tried hard and had success. We were the first ones picked in the line when you're picking teams or whatever, right? Like, that was a badge of honor. Like, now apparently it's like, oh, I don't want to try too hard. Well, go back to the minors because that's what it's going to get you.
It's an unreal story. Like, I'm the biggest Dimitri fan, so hearing that, like, almost
so
me to
sad
the floor,
too,
like,
right?
Oh, I know.
What a great man. Yeah.
And he, like, I don't remember who told the story, but someone told the story about how competitive he truly was.
Oh.
Like he took everything seriously.
After practice, we
laps and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
How was the after practice?
After practice, he would make us sit there and we do breakaways. And like, he would have to win every time. Like, finally, I'm like, okay, Pav, I gotta go. Like, I gotta get home. I got two kids. I gotta get back. Right. So we're like an hour after practice. Right. And I'm like, I'm never gonna get a breakaway in a game anyway with my speed. So he was an absolute beauty. So,
yeah.
How was that first conversation after you separated his shoulder?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was awful. I'll never forget. I think it was Todd Gill was on my team and he tried to fight me in the locker room. He was on my team. I'm like, you're on my team. He goes, no, Pavel's on my team. You're not on my team. This is just an inter-squad game.
Man.
Right. I mean, I think it was him. I don't know. I can't remember, but, anyway, that was a crazy, crazy story. So
it's wild. Josh, you have anything?
No, do you want to hit them with the... So I can go with the...
Yeah.
So you've been in Utah. What has been your favorite part about being in Utah with this team? I haven't got to go to a game. Mike went to a game last year and said it was the time of his life, and I want to see a game in Utah so bad now because of that.
Well, I think everyone's like, the you know, they think of Utah and they're like, oh, you can't drink, you can't, you know, have fun. It's like, oh my God, like not even close. Like you want to have a cocktail, you want to have a fun time. Like the Delta Center is where it's at. It really is. It is a hockey town. I'm so happy for the community and what they're building there. And it does start with leadership, and it starts at the top with the ownership, Ryan and Ashley Smith. But it's just such a fun environment, right? And there's no stone unturned with them. They will spend whatever amount of money it is to give me a show, to have another product for their fans to watch on top of the old-fashioned broadcast, right? Like they are throwing money at anything and they're seeing what sticks. And then they're going to, you know, like make it that much better, right? The facilities, it's the nicest facilities in the league, maybe in pro sports as far as their practice rink. Their game rink, the locker room, the gym equipment, the kitchen, like you don't have to leave. You never want to leave. And that's why he made it so nice. He's like, I want everyone just to never go home and just be here. They have a barber shop for God's sake in the rink. Like the guys are sitting there, they're all getting their haircuts. I'm like, how cool is this? Like, it's insane. I mean, so now, and along with that, the excuses are now gone. Right. Yeah. So Utah now, there's no more excuses. We're not playing in the mullet. Oh, we can't do this. We only get 5,000 fans. No, you're playing in a packed house and they can drink. I think the first game of their first season, I think they set a beer record for beer. They have a beer cam and they put it on the Jumbotron. And this girl had a prosthetic leg. And she fills her prosthetic leg up with a beer and chugs it out of her leg. I'm like, welcome to Utah. This is unbelievable. So it's been so fun. So I'm certainly enjoying it. And I know the players are. It is now a destination around the league for free agents.
Yeah.
Now, that's such a big thing, is like the city itself is so beautiful. I mean, like, the most gorgeous backdrop in any city, seriously. Mm-hmm. And the fact that everything is within such, like, almost like walking distance right there is amazing. I personally love the beer cam. That was the coolest thing ever. Like, I wish every arena did a beer cam.
Oh yeah.
Purposefully, it would make it so much more fun. Ryan Smith, you just mentioned him and Ashley. Like, I can't believe that Arizona couldn't find someone even half as good as him. Like, I just can't believe it. He is truly gonna pioneer everything there, and he already has. Is he around the players? Like, is he conversing with players a lot, kind of trying to get in their heads about the game and stuff, trying to ask them more questions about what they might want and things like that?
No, I don't think so. He's been very clear. He's hired the people that do all that stuff, right? He kind of stays out of it, but he's also in it for a high five, right? For a smile, for a wave, right? And that's what he brings to the table, right? He's support. He's there on the glass almost every single game with all his kids, and you know, he is soaking this up. And you know, like, he wants to win. That's the other thing. He wants to win worse than anybody. And that's dangerous for a GM sometimes too, because you're trying to follow a process, right? And you're trying to, you know, stay on the path, right? And an owner that passionate is like, hey, I'll spend whatever, I'll do this, I'll let's get this guy, let's get that guy. Well, you kind of, you know, still got to pump the brakes a little bit, I'm sure, in those moments. Because Bill Armstrong does have a plan and he wants to stick with it, because what can happen is all of a sudden you bring someone in, maybe they don't fit, and maybe you blew up a few draft picks or a younger player that was going to be great, right? So you kind of push the envelope a little bit, and it can get you in a little bit of trouble also.
Yeah, I was going to say, we were talking before the podcast, and we were saying, just the gamers and the winners that Bill has added to this team, and just that this roster from top to bottom is a good one, and it's a fun one to watch. And we saw the not so fun end of playing against them the other night. But Liam O'Brien, man, what a guy. And you hate him and he's not on your team, but you love him if he's on your team. It's like Steve Ott in a lot of ways, where, man, you want to punch him in the face, but and if he's playing with you on that line, you're like, I'm feeling good. I'm invincible right now.
Yeah, it certainly helps. And I don't think that's ever going to go away. you know, I laugh when people are like, oh, we need to take fighting out of hockey. I'm like, really? Have you ever seen what they cheer the most about? I mean, have you seen the UFC ratings? I mean, people want violence, right? And for our game, most importantly, it serves a purpose. It keeps people safe. It really does. And very rarely do guys get hurt fighting. I mean, you get hurt way more with a hit or an elbow or a shoulder to the chin, right? But it serves a purpose, and it does make guys like Clayton Keller and Brett Hull and Al MacInnis and Chris Pronger able to do their jobs because they had Kelly Chase and Tony Twist and these guys to make them feel that way. And Brett Hull admits it. He's like, I never would have done what I did in my career without Kelly and Twister. Right. And that's a testimony to those guys. And Liam O'Brien is that guy for Utah. And it's still early in the season. I never get too excited. I've been around this game too long to the highs and lows just become, you know, so great. Right. And at least, you know, right. At least, you know, with the Blues, they have that level. And right now we're seeing it with Utah. I think they're undefeated at home. I think they've won 5 straight. They have this bar and that level. Now that is the new level. And that's the level now the coaching staff is going to hold you to. So that's also a slippery slope.
Do you have any shout outs for you? Like anybody coming on your podcast soon that you want to shout out? Any other stuff that you've been
doing? I wouldn't mind giving Chaser a shout out if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Thanks for having me on the show, you guys. I just want to give out a big Kelly Chase. I love you. This guy protected me. He was a big reason, as I mentioned, why I made the St. Louis Blues. He's in the fight of his life right now, still fighting cancer, leukemia. The guy's literally been through it all, and he's still on top. We love you, Chaser. Happy birthday. I don't know when this is going to get released, but it is officially the day we're taping this podcast. It is his birthday today. So happy birthday, buddy. I hope you're having yourself a day, fella, because he's earned it more than anybody. So he was one of the best teammates I ever had. And again, he showed me the ropes. After that day I fought him on the ice, he also had me to his house. And we had a barbecue that night. Myself, Marty Reisner were invited to go to Kelly Chase with Ray, his wife. And I think he had two, I think it was Will and Ben at the time were his two kids that he had. They were just little buggers in shitty diapers. So best teammate I ever had. So cheers to you, Chaser.
Yeah, no, that's thanks, awesome. Nasher, thanks so much.
Yeah, no worries, boys. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Of course.
No, thanks for hopping on with us.
Hello, everyone. Welcome here to the 5-Minute Major podcast of STL, presented by Across the Board. Yes, that's right. We are now partnered with Across the Board Handcrafted Unique Entertainment, which is a one-of-a-kind St. Louis-based company that creates some of the best games in the country. They have games ranging from horse racing to NASCAR, baseball to hockey. Across the Board provides quality entertainment for all ages. Here's one of their penny hockey games that we were able to partner with them on. So it has our logo, which is super cool. You can play this game at home. You can display it in your man cave. There's so many different potentials that you can do with these games. But you should check them out, guys.
We couldn't be happier to have Kim McDaniel and her company on as a sponsor or partner. Her and her husband started this company from their garage 17 years ago, and it's blossomed into something so cool and amazing. You will learn lots more about them, so please stay tuned and make sure to check their links in the description below to know more about the McDaniel story and Across the Board.